Chris, what was the thing that you had never done as a child now? Was it Tailspin?
Well, what happened
How
was...
you had no concept of what Tailspin was.
I didn't know what Tailspin was because...
Kid Cloud Kicker? You didn't know who Kid Cloud Kicker was.
Sorry, I did
not. Or the Sea Duck?
I did not. Well...
Don Carnage, Air Pirates.
So sorry.
Don Carnage.
Was that the shark? I looked it up on Wikipedia.
No.
He was like a dog man. Like, they all were secretly dog men.
Secretly? Well, yeah. Was the lady a dog person?
I have no idea. I think she might have been a bear lady or
Wasn't
something.
Wasn't
she a con? She was a sexy bear lady.
He was like a business magnet.
Right.
She was like a super sexy bear lady. Like, yeah. Like, Blue looked like a bear.
Yeah.
She looked like a skinny...
Yeah, so the animators could masturbate to her.
Yeah, like,
think they're not, you have a wild...
All animators are masturbating all the time.
They are.
Well, the thing I didn't have was cable.
Yeah, this was syndicated. This was all... Disney Afternoon was syndicated.
I don't know what to tell you guys.
I don't know what to tell you.
I just never watched...
Because your story is not holding up to close scrutiny, sir.
It's not like there was mandatory screenings for Disney Afternoon.
Maybe there should have been.
We watched a lot of PBS. I watched a lot of Nickelodeon.
How did you watch Nickelodeon if you didn't have cable?
Yeah, hello.
This story crumbles like cornbread.
It was on broadcast.
So many holes.
Nickelodeon is a cable channel.
I don't know what to tell you.
I don't know what to tell you. Your story doesn't check out. Nickelodeon is a cable. If you don't have cable, you have like ABC, NBC, Fox,
I don't mean
CBS,
to give you the third
PBS.
Degree, but that's exactly what I'm going to give you right now because this shit's full of holes.
Yeah.
I watched some Nickelodeon shows. Then maybe we did, and my mom... No, but my mom made a big deal out of the fact that when we moved, she was like, I finally gave in, and we're going to get cable. I was like, okay, fine. So I don't know. I just never got around to it.
I just can't believe you never heard of Tailspin. It never came up. That song.
Tailspin.
Spin it.
Spin it. Baron Grinnett.
So good.
Baron Grinnett, that's what he says, because he's a
bear,
you
right.
see.
I was
grin because he's happy all the time.
I was thinking maybe there was like a local barony.
Louis's job at this?
He was like a bartender.
Was he, yeah.
And they were like chums.
Well, the weird part
there
was...
There was no Bagheera in Tailspin.
It
was Baloo's fantasy, not the other way around.
Other TV shows on the Disney Afternoon I did recognize at least. So I must have like seen it at like a friend's house or something.
Yeah, but to be fair, if there was a Bagheera, they would have had to have been like two gay dads.
Yeah, that's true.
Because that's basically what they are in Jungle Book.
I will maybe Bagheera was his piece on the
two
side.
Gay dads. Two gay monkey dads.
And that's basically the story of Jungle Book. The story Jungle Book is like the first two gay dad story.
Yeah, two daddies raising a boy.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Learning to put aside their differences and
so
raising
they can,
a man.
So they can raise a good boy.
Yep.
Actually,
a good sweet boy.
It's really just Two and a Half Men.
Yeah.
Ugh, God.
It's the first iteration of Two and a Half Men.
Actually, if you play the Two and a Half Men theme song backwards, it's just Tailspin.
Bagheera's a dead man.
They never talk about him either.
No, he doesn't exist.
He comes up.
Like, Mowgli isn't there, but I guess because there are no people in this world, like, maybe Mowgli doesn't
exist. Yeah, that's too awkward
in
the world of animals.
Yeah. When animals are calling the shots, how does the man come fit into all this?
This is your host this week, Lee Abercrombie Delahanty.
And I'm Chris Soda in the School's Ravel.
And I'm Brendan, your boy from Monday Drishler.
Your boy!
I really don't think there's any way you could have known from those nicknames that the movie we've just finished watching is Hal Hartley's The Girl from Monday from 2005.
Mm-hmm.
A sort of indescribable piece of 80-minute cinema.
If someone was to threaten me with death until I gave them a genre, I would say it was indie sci-fi.
Yes, yeah. It technically is like Hal Hartley's foray into sci-fi. We'll get into the movie, what we thought of it.
I have a real quick announcement first.
Sure.
Do you know what it is today? Or what it will be?
No.
Our 1 year anniversary. This episode will mark 1 year that we've been doing it.
Really?
Yeah.
Happy anniversary, guys.
So happy anniversary.
I know.
If you all look under your chairs, you'll find a little more practical expression of my appreciation.
A gun!
A blowjob. Yes.
Sex for all.
Oh, we're gonna have to claim this afterwards. Yes.
But happy anniversary, everybody.
Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
You've kept me off the streets for a year.
So, before we get into this movie, let's talk about the drink we had, and someone else can take that.
I got it right here. So the drink we made is called an uninsured sex on the beach, which is actually a sangria. And we made it using Prosecco, Riesling, white grape juice, 2 apples, 2 cups of cranberries, and 4 sprigs of rosemary.
Yeah, so Yum. This movie involves a lot of sex and a beach prominently, so we had to call it this. But I cannot stand Sex on the Beach IRL. So.
And, well, the movie also bends around the idea of sex being insured, which yes. we'll get into. But yeah. I thought it was a really delicious drink.
Yeah. I love it. I love a good sangria.
I do too. Yeah, on a winter, on a 10-degree day, there's Although, nothing like yeah. a sangria.
It is a winter sangria. I think it was fitting for that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I actually like this better than most, like, summery sangria, because I'm not into, like, again, I'm just not into the citrus as much. Like, I like the tart cranberry, I like the apple involved.
You liked the rosemary?
Yeah, that was
yeah,
a
the
nice,
rosemary is a nice touch.
It was a nice, dry, not too sweet sangria for me. I'm not really into the sweetness of like, most of these drinks.
Yeah.
So I could, like, I could easily have, like, really gotten wasted on this shit.
I mean, there's still more in the fridge.
There's still, like, most of a pitcher.
Yeah, like, after we're recording tonight, I'm not saying that's not exactly what I'm
saying. It's just open your mouth
and just, like, have a couple more glasses of that.
Or maybe you just put it on your table and just stick one of your huge straws in there and just...
just go, oh, yeah. Just to last me through the night. But yeah, I thought it was a really good drink. This is one of the best ones.
For me.
It turned out really well. It was... We have a tendency to make things overly sweet.
Yeah.
And this was nicely, like, a little bitter, but a little sweet. It was bittersweet.
To reflect
like
our...
Like the picture.
Exactly. I was going to say, to reflect our own budding dystopia, is this the year we make less sweet drinks?
Could be. God willing. All right, so we've got to get into the task of talking about what the hell happens in this movie, and... As the sort of resident Hal Hartley scholar and also the person who's seen this movie the most, I have taken on this role. So I've got my bullet points here. So we'll see how fast we can get through this. So the Gopher Monday, we open on, like, I get 10 minutes solid, I think, at least, of, like, montage and soliloquy, of which there's a lot. The main character, whose name is Jack, played by Bill Sage, pretty much talks over... like, a good 70% of this movie, I think. So we start with a sort of confusing sequence that makes a bit more sense later of, like, getting a car, going to a beach. The first scene proper is Jack sort of going to work, where we understand that he is a sort of ad man at this big corporation that has taken over America called Triple M. And there's an implication that there was a revolution 10 years ago. And now, like, it's sort of this consumerist dystopian society. The biggest feature of which is that sex appeal and your sex value is, like, a commodity that can be, that can increase your credit rating. And so, therefore, if you are sexually desirable, you will have a better credit rating than others. So the more people you have sex with and report that sex... the higher your credit rating will be.
There's also barcodes on people's wrists
yes,
to buy things with and to also ID them, I think.
Yep, and there's like some, your standard dystopian hallmarks of like cops with weird VR headsets.
Viewmasters and super soakers.
Yeah, spray painted super soakers.
Yeah.
So this is the sort of world we're set up with. Jack seems to have, through his own implication, have been a major part in creating this world. It was his idea to ensure sex appeal. We see that in a flashback. But this is just like an ordinary day at work. While he's at work, he seems sort of out of it and dazed. Like, he's not really into it anymore. He seems sort of disinterested, bored. His coworker, Cecile, played by Sabrina Lloyd, does sort of make a beginnings of a pass at him, which he sort of tentatively returns. And it's sort of implied that, like, it's a weighty subject because we're in a world where sex appeal is insured. The line between, like, increasing your value and, like, sexual harassment, which is a very strongly punished crime, is very thin. But he indicates also through voiceover that this is something he is doing to get an alibi. We do not know for what. That night, we are introduced to Will, played by Leo Fitzpatrick, who is, we're meant to understand, a high schooler. He's clearly
he is at least 32, which when it's not clear until, at least it wasn't clear to me until a little later in the movie that he was supposed to be a high schooler. And when that happened,
he says he's 17.
Yeah. I was like, sorry, no.
But yes, we meet Will and a few of his other fellow young rebels that are, they're call themselves the Partisans, as they attempt to break into a news facility and sabotage the news feed. However, they get in there and there's no one in the security desk, and they're like, well, this is too easy. They get spooked and they run off. The cops are sort of immediately on their ass. And then there's sort of a chaotic scene where they're not really sure what's going on. And neither are we. It's shot very blurry and confusingly.
Actually, can you say something about the way the movie is shot?
Yeah, period? So, like, if you've ever seen La Jetée, which is a movie done mostly through still images, this is, like, a compromise between La Jetée and a real movie, where, like, you'll get solid 3 minutes of moving, and then it'll freeze frame, but in a very blurry freeze frame, not a crisp frame that we land on ever. And it does this repeatedly, and frequently the stuff that is visual and moving is, like, overexposed, and there's the blurriness of movement is like impenetrable.
Well, and then in the scene in which like Will and his friends are breaking into that place, there's four bodies moving around very closely to each other.
You have no idea. And also,
it's very confusing.
The other hallmark of it is because it's a movie that's very clearly done on the cheap. All of the shots are
so
like
tight,
medium to close. Because if you ever went to a wide shot, you would be revealed to be in the shitty conference room.
Yeah,
probably.
I have never seen shots that tight that wasn't just on one person. There were so many people in the frame.
And it's done, I think there's a lot of stuff to do. But anyway, that's sort of what you're dealing with.
It's shot digitally, we should be said. It's shot digitally in 2005, you said it was?
Yep.
Which was a time when we were not really, like, digital cameras were very expensive to use. And so presumably Hal Hartley, being an indie director on a budget, was using a not-so-great digital camera. And it shows, because it looks like it was shot on my flip phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, this is very, like, Hal Hartley is for sure, like, he does not have a lot of money to make his films with that. He makes them all himself. You better believe it.
I believe it.
I believe it.
He takes no money.
He also never met an angle he didn't touch.
This is true. Not there's other movies that do this, but not all hashtag not all Hartley movies. So what we pick up with there is while that is happening, Jack and Cecile have like taken it back to his place and have tried to have sex, but then he sort of gets cold feet. And doesn't want to do it. He doesn't want to go through with it. And she is very upset by this because it means that her value as a consumer will go down. And she says she's going to file a claim against him. So the next day at work, Cecile does do this. She files the claim against Jack. Jack sort of just accepts it and tells the truth about how he doesn't want to have sex with her. We also see Jack, and these are the scenes that we saw in the beginning of the movie, getting a car and getting a gun and driving out to the beach where he gets really drunk, takes some kind of pill, and then sort of puts the gun to his head like he's going to kill himself. But he doesn't. The next scene we see is Will, the partisan from the first scene, drives out to the beach, Lord knows why, to the exact same beach, pulls up next to Jack, sees Jack, and presumes that he is dead. There is no gunshot wound, but there is also, like, an empty bottle of vodka and pills. So Will takes Jack's gun and sort of goes away, and then he goes back to his partisans and says, like, the boss is dead.
Right.
So this is a sort of confirmation that we've never get out loud that Jack, who is this admin that works for Triple M, is also the leader of the partisans. Meanwhile, Jack wakes up in his car, sees a woman out on the beach who, like, sort of pops up onto the surface, and this is also part of the opening montage of this girl that falls into the ocean.
I prefer to refer to her as, like, a very beautiful plank of wood.
She's not that, there's not a lot of personality to go around. So Jack finds this girl, takes her to the doctor first, and she doesn't have a barcode on her. The doctor says she must be not from around here, she must be an immigrant, quote unquote. It's revealed that some time ago we discovered that just this other planet in the constellation Monday had alien life on it, and that aliens have definitely come here before, and they're not quite sure where they are, but like, they seem to keep coming down and searching for something. While Jack is doing this, Cecile actually meets Will in a bar. Will takes Cecile to a sort of like rebel sex club
party
where people can have sex because it feels good and not make any market value from it. And Cecile seems a bit sort of like intrigued by the danger of it. Like her curiosity is piqued by it.
I love that her question upon seeing a group of people having sex is this a brokerage firm?
Yeah, she thinks it's a broker. I mean, so yeah, after Jack goes to the hospital with the girl, he takes her home, buys her some clothes, and basically there's some scenes of her showing her like how to eat food and drink water because she's not used to a human body, basically. It seems like what they say about the aliens, that they're sort of like a collective intelligence that are non-corporeal. So therefore, when they come here, they sort of have to obtain a body somehow. They just create one out of nothing. But they're not familiar with, like, gravity or, like, anything like that. The next day, Jack leaves the girl in his apartment while he goes to work, where he is sort of shunted off of his current project and given the task of managing the Soda Pop in the Schools campaign.
Yep.
Which he perceives to be a sort of, like, they're sort of onto him and they're pushing him out of the company. Will, meanwhile, finds Jack at work, surprised that Jack is still alive because he thought Jack was dead. They catch each other up. Will says he met this girl, and they're connected off that the girl that he met was Cecile, who works at Triple M. Immediately after this, Jack gets a call from Cecile, who's been arrested for being in that sex club. Cecile is sentenced to teach high school for 2 years. That's a hard labor hard sentence labor, in this universe. The high school sort of universe they introduce you to is where all the kids have to turn in their guns at the entrance to the school and take, like, Ritalin or ADD medication.
Yeah. It appears to be, because I believe he also used the word sedative, so it sounded like it was a...
They take medication. They're given... They're called attention deficit drugs.
Right.
So they're given medication on the second they walk in, and the teachers are all convicts because of the high amount of gun violence in schools. And the teachers pretty much do nothing but sit there while the kids plug into, like, Oculus Rifts.
This is
2005, so they're not really Oculus Rifts, but it's kind of weirdly, like, prescient of an Oculus Rift scenario.
Mm. Although it does bring up the question why there is a teacher, but go ahead.
Yeah, that's what's going on with Cecile and Will. While they're at the school, they sort of... get to know each other a little bit better. Will is clearly trying to bring Cecile into the partisan fold. He's giving her illicit books, such as Walden, which have been removed from the internet in this universe. And Cecile is also passing the book around to other convicts who she thinks will help her be friendly. Jack, meanwhile, takes the soda to the doctor because he suspects that something about the soda will have a reaction with the attention deficit drugs that the kids take. And he thinks that Triple M is up to something, but he's not sure what it is or what will happen if they take these drugs and drink the soda at the same time. That night, Jack goes back to his apartment, finds the girl has, like, followed his instructions to the letter and drunk, like, a whole bottle of vodka. So she throws up from being incredibly drunk, tells the girl that she has to go home, that the longer she stays here, she won't be able to go back. Something about when the aliens stay here too long, they lose the ability to go home. And the girl says she can't go home. She can't go back alone, basically. She's here for someone. Meanwhile, back at the high school, Will is doing too well on the school tests, which are meant to screen out the smart kids and do something about them. The cops are now after Will for suspecting him of being an immigrant / alien as well. Cecile, meanwhile, is caught with the illegal book Walden, so the two of them escape high school. Will goes in hiding. Cecile runs to Jack's apartment where she meets the girl promptly. Jack returns home that night to find that Cecile and the girl are now buddy-buddy. And Jack suspects that, like, this is probably it for the girl. She's going to make a friend with Cecile and she's not going to be able to go back to her planet. That night, they all have a lovely pleasure orgy.
They have a three-way.
Yep. The next day, Jack tells Cecile to watch the girl. Don't let her leave. He goes to meet with his doctor friend again, who tells him that, like, wow, the soda is going to cause the kids, when they take their deficit drugs, to, like, go insane and start killing each other. So this, whatever Triple M is up to, like, this is what it is. Like, they're going to make all these kids kill each other. So Jack concludes that they're trying to, like, show the power of the state by creating a crisis, which they can then shut down all by themselves. Cecile gets a call from Will to meet him, promptly decides it's a good idea to take the girl from Monday with her to go meet Will, where they are all immediately confronted by police. Will is shot in the ensuing fracas. Cecile is arrested, and the girl, who does not have a barcode, which is presumably a sign of an exile or an immigrant, is ignored and left alone.
Which they note as well. They're like, she's not going to get far without a barcode.
Yeah, it's unclear why they don't just arrest her, but they don't. They leave her there. Jack confronts Abercrombie, his boss at Triple M, about the soda situation. Abercrombie then reveals that they know who Jack is. They know that he is the leader of the Partisans, and that they've been watching him for 10 years since he came from the planet Monday, and says that, you know, if you had come to us earlier with your being the leader of this terrorist group, we could have worked together because the resistance is good for business. But you're not doing it well enough, so I'm here to take over from you, the terrorist stuff. So basically, he's going to use the Partisans as a sort of, like, counter resistance to Triple M, which will then increase Triple M's business, basically. Right. Like, having competition is good for business. He lets Jack go for unknown reasons again. I'm not really sure why. He says that, like, yeah, you're done. You're basically done here, Jack. But you can still hang out for unknown reasons. The girl from Monday tries and fails to set Cecile free by offering to have sex with the principal for, like, a lot of
the market value. The principal and one of the guards.
Yeah,
two of the guards, right?
Two of the guards, yeah. Because one person is not going to be enough value. So she does that. She has, like, sex Really? Rapid fire, but then it's too late. Cecile is sent to the moon because the principal ends up being arrested for insider trading, which is apparently what he's doing. But this, the last scene of the movie is Jack and the girl deciding what to do. Jack decides he's going to stay and wait for Cecile because he's been here so long that he's more human than ever. The girl says she's going to try to go back. So they drive back to the beach. Jack watches the girl go onto the waves, doesn't see her come up, and says that she hopes that she made it back. And that he is going to do what humans do best and try to resist. End of movie.
Yep.
That's my best attempt. All of these are things are verifiable facts in this movie. There's a lot of assumptions you can make, but what I tried to recite here was only what is said by characters, because a lot of the things in this movie go unsaid. What I'd like to start talking about first with this movie is, what do we think of the world building in this movie? The subtopic A being, how well thought out slash interesting slash flawed and not thought out is this dystopian future?
I have a question, actually.
Sure.
So the basic premise of the sex thing is that you have sex that boosts basically your credit value.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They say more than once that it's your credit rating.
Right. So in theory, what they're saying is that, okay, the biggest problem that I guess I have here is that that shouldn't make a difference, because I don't know what stops you from having sex with more people. You would think the idea could be like, well, more attractive people have more sex, but why not? Why couldn't like two unattractive people just be like, look, we have to raise our credit values. Let's just have a lot of sex right now. There doesn't seem to be any correlation. I mean,
they never say anything about attractive. They just say that young, sexually active people are the biggest consumers. That's where Jack gets the idea to market sex value in the first place.
Which just still doesn't work to me as an abyss of economy.
The idea, I mean, the way that they describe it is, if you're having a lot of sex, you are valued as a consumer. So they're going to give you the credit to buy the things, because they know that you're going to buy things.
I actually think it's an interesting idea. I just don't think...
You're spreading and shaking
my
head.
I'm audibly shaking my head.
I think it's an interesting idea. I just don't think it was...
I'm not editorializing. I'm just trying to explain to you.
No, I understand.
The movie is positing.
Well, I'm just saying I don't think it works as the function of a society.
I mean, I think it could be a lot better thought out, but I think it's an intriguing starting place.
Do you think it... Because I don't know that it's intended to make sense.
Ugh.
Versus being a theater for Hal Hartley to throw out some ideas.
Okay. So here's something that I want to get into.
So do you think that regardless of that, do you think it should make sense?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. <Moving on. laughs> Because here is a question I actually asked myself a few times when I was watching this movie on my own. And I was like, at what point do I have to require art to be accessible to me? And if this movie continues to throw out ideas without going into them in any meaningful depth, then I feel as if I'm getting shut out pretty severely.
So this was that point.
Yeah. It really was. Where I was just like, I can't access this.
Maybe, all right, so maybe this is now versus the later is the best time to throw out what I did was, and I think I gave you guys cliff notes of what I found.
Mm-hmm.
I watched the making of this movie, and I'm very familiar with Hal Hartley and how he makes movies. What I will say that he said about this movie in particular is that he specifically says he wanted to use this sci-fi world or this concept, and the reason why he brought aliens into it, as on top of all that, is because he wanted to talk about a lot of different things, but not go into any of them in depth.
Why?
I know. I'm not saying that's good or bad.
I'll editorialize. I'm saying that's bad.
I think that's bad. I'm not trying to be that guy who, like, I don't know best storytelling in the world, but I do not think it's effective storytelling.
Well, Hal Hartley will also tell you in his interviews that he is not interested in the conventions of storytelling. He understands them, but he knows that his own instinct, when he makes movies, that he's fighting to... Like, it's a cognitive dissonance between not wanting to follow the conventions of storytelling,
right,
but also wanting to create a good narrative.
Which I understand, and I actually think is a really interesting idea, and I think it's an interesting idea to try to acknowledge. In this movie, it just doesn't pan out.
All I'm doing right now is giving you, like, context
of
what he thinks.
But in this movie, it trips over that snare pretty hard.
No, I think it's... No, we can all acknowledge that, like, some aspects of this world fall apart at close scrutiny.
Yes.
And I don't think that it's meant to hold up to close scrutiny. I don't think that it was ever going to do that. But,
I think there's a difference between sort of, like, the slight storytelling of something like, say, Henry Fool versus this. Because it's like a very simple story, and it does not follow the conventional sort of three-act structure, really, or anything like that. But... I'm not sitting there wondering, like, but how did the garbage man become a poet? Like, I don't need to know that because it's fine and it's something that could conceivably happen. In this world, we're expected to believe that we transition from like our world to a world based off of like extreme consumerism where sex is a commodity, also aliens keep showing up.
In 10 years.
That is, I think there's a difference between creating like, between using a real world and just not wanting to sort of go into storytelling, but between like creating an entire world, having to do like the legwork of building that world, and then just being like, I don't really care about it that much.
What if you want, what do you think matters the most in this movie to have existed for him to get across any of his points?
Because here's where I'm not connecting, and here's where I think is a big problem, which is, if it was never his intention to go into these ideas, why bring them up in a movie that is meant to be consumed by other people? So are they only supposed to be...
I can't speak for Hal Hartley in this context.
I know, but I'm...
I can't answer this for you.
But that is a question that came up for me, and I was just like, so then why did you make this movie?
To somewhat answer your question, what I often think that Hal Hartley does in movies versus anything, like, what telling a story or giving a message is like, he sees the world a certain way, or an aspect of the world a certain way, and he's using his films as a mirror to sort of reflect what he sees in the world. And sort of in Ned Rifle, which he did in 2015, he was sort of looking at the sort of new, you know, Christian South and like the way that youth is being brought up there. And he was reflecting that with Ned Rifle.
Mm-hmm.
And in that movie, it's like, again, he takes like existing characters that from his other movies and like transforms them for the purpose of telling a story. Like, They have very little to do with the characters in Fate Grim and Henry Fool, but he just wanted to use them for this particular genre. Similarly, that's probably what he was doing here. He was probably like, I need to just come up with this world so that I can to show people what I see about this world.
If right you're now. Making a point about consumerism, though, you don't need to develop a sci-fi dystopia in which consumerism has become like...
Maybe he didn't. I mean, but he did.
I know, yeah. He did, and then he like half-assed it.
Does anything about the sci-fi dystopia interest you or work well or intrigue you?
Yeah, as an idea, I'm very intrigued by it.
There are concepts of it that work well. They're just not fully realized at any point.
I think that we're going to keep hitting this circular point, though, where... I really grapple with this idea that it was intentional for those ideas to not be thought out. But if you're saying it was supposed to be...
That's a fact, though.
I know.
It's verifiable.
I know. And I'm not doubting it. Nor am I putting you on the spot for bringing it up, but just mostly, I find it very hard to understand.
I think the point that Chris is trying to make, if I may mansplain to you, Chris...
Please.
...is that... You got fuzz in your beard.
Of course I do. Thanks, Dad.
is not so much that, like, I can certainly believe that Hal Hartley wanted to not go into details and not have these conversations, but the question that I then have is, so why did you make this movie?
This is not a good movie.
So then here's what I'm wondering.
I knew that when I gave it to you.
Was this world supposed to just be set dressing for a story he wanted to tell?
What was the story he wanted to tell?
And that's not meant to be... I will say, if that's the case, if he didn't want questions to be asked and he didn't want people to hold on to any of the points, then creating a dystopian world in which sex appeal is insured and gives you a better credit rating opens so many unnecessary doors that leads me away from the story that I'm supposed to be following.
Yeah, my question really is just, what is the story he's trying to tell?
We'll get to that.
Okay.
we'll get to that eventually. In the discussion. But I think for sure what we're dealing with is a world that is meant to hold up to the very barest of scrutinies and no more. Because, like, the second you start asking these questions about, like, you kept trying to ask me questions about, like, what happens if X... What exactly does insider trading mean in this world? I don't know.
Okay, so
if you think about it, you can't figure it out.
Here's the thing, though, too, right? So there's fridge logic in movies, right? Where it's like something happens in a movie and you don't think about it until like an hour later when you're like, oh, wait, but why did this happen?
Yeah.
But this doesn't have that. Like, I'm sitting here watching this thinking, but wait, how is that possible? Like, it would be one thing if none of this hit me until like an hour after the movie and I was like, oh, I guess that doesn't really make sense. But I'm sitting there trying to make sense of this in the moment and it doesn't work.
Especially because so many of his soliloquies are so based in this world. So I am actually would argue that regardless of what his intention was, I am repeatedly invited to muse about the inner workings of this world for which I have very little information.
I think one of the biggest problems is that most of this world is explained to us through fucking Bill Sage soliloquizing about it.
As Brendan brought up while we were watching it together, they all talk in a very confusing way sometimes.
If you thought there was nothing really in depth about explained about how this world works... How did you think the aliens came into it?
Oh,
like,
boy.
How confusing was that?
Well, actually...
Because they don't... Because we have some very different thoughts about the aliens.
Yeah.
You thought that everyone... Like, you guys thought that I think everyone knew about these aliens and didn't care.
Because of the way they would just say, like, immigrant.
So yeah, because like, okay. All these people seem to acknowledge the fact that there are these things called immigrants.
All the people... But all the people... To offer a counterpoint to that, I'm not saying I agree to or subscribe to either one of these theories, but all the people that end up saying that are higher up people in the government.
The other teacher in the school.
Yeah, the other teacher in the school is the first one to say it.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
No, so she's not the first one to say it.
She does say it. Right. She does acknowledge. She does say it in that, like, he's an
immigrant.
Like, she, like, not yeah, clearly yeah. as to imply, like, immigrant equals
well,
alien.
It was just confusing.
You guys also were confused about why it wasn't a bigger deal that there were aliens in this world.
Yeah.
No one seemed
yeah,
to care.
Well, that wasn't necessarily it. It was just that, okay, what I assumed was that everyone just, like, knew there were aliens, but that they had no way of, like, tracking them or doing anything about it, so everyone was just sort of like, we know they're there, but whatever, we can't do much about it. I actually found the alien aspect to make the most sense, just because I was like, I don't need to know how they got from here to there or back again. I don't need to know why going into the ocean has to do with it. None of that really, like, tugged at me, just because we didn't dwell on it that much.
Do you think it's because you don't understand how alien worlds could work, but you do understand how, like, the economy works on a basic level? And so therefore, like...
Sure, but...
I think also, for a storytelling point, I don't need to know why they end up in the ocean, and I don't need to know why they have to go back to the ocean. I don't need to know why they somehow found a human body to come to Earth.
Right.
It doesn't matter. This matters. Like, the basis of, like, this universe matters, but the fact that, like, aliens just show up, I'm okay with.
So, yeah, considering you're not sure what the plot was, why do you think the one matters versus the other?
Because one is based on our own world, and
right.
the other is not.
Well, and
that's what I'm saying. Like, because the alien stuff is, like, it's made up fantasy world time, you're not going
to
question it.
I think also the fact that an alien shows up who happens to look like a Brazilian supermodel is not something that, like, it doesn't makes me stop the story. It's just like, okay, like, this could happen, I suppose. If you're having aliens, like, that's plausible.
Well, especially because the alien bit is not sold as our intro point into this world. The information about the dystopic society is...
But then the aliens come in about 20 minutes in, and they just kind of say, like, oh, by the way, there's aliens.
Yeah, well, and I would also say it has...
That's literally, like, almost
the
last
It has the least to do with the plot, whereas a great deal of the plot is tied up in this, like, sex system.
The aliens almost seem like an afterthought.
So do you know what I mean? Like, I don't care so much about the alien thing because it takes up a portion of the plot, but not as much as the sex thing.
You're not thrown by it at all.
No.
The aliens.
No.
In fact, I actually found it the easiest thing to draw conclusions about.
Why were you asking, though, why did he put aliens in the movie, though?
Because I just don't see... I don't have a question about, like, how it works. I just wonder why they're there in the first place. What is gained from putting aliens in the movie?
Narratively.
Yeah. I would imagine the theory would be that if you have aliens in a movie like this, it's because you want an outsider perspective and something about the human condition.
Yeah.
But you've already made up a human condition for this movie. So why do you need an outsider perspective when the entire audience is an outsider perspective?
Especially with how that human condition has been explained or not explained,
yeah.
as the case really is.
So I just don't get what an alien brings to this story.
I don't know. I don't know that I can let it go, that I'm really not supposed to chase down the meat and potatoes of this world. I mean, I can think of three plot points to every alien, one alien plot point that has to do with sex. Like, that's his job.
Before we get into that, well, I'll shunt what I had as number two aside, because it sounds like it makes more sense to go into the actual plot structure
sure.
next, because
mm-hmm.
the world building is feeding into what is this movie actually about. So, Chris, if you want to be the first person to give me what you think.
Okay.
What is the main plot, and then what,
two
subplots happen in this movie?
Okay.
I have my own
So
theories.
What you're saying is I can do an A, a B, and a C.
Yes.
Okay.
And if you can't find three, then that's also a good answer.
Okay.
Do you want me to start? Because I might be able
to...
I can start because mine will take like a minute.
Okay, go.
Go.
Okay. So the A story is basically just... Jack is this character who has a role in creating the universe that all these characters now live in,
mm-hmm.
and we just sort of follow him and the fallout of the decisions that he makes. B story would be Will and Natalie from Sports Night having their little relationship and Natalie from Sports Night becoming like involved in this world.
Yeah.
C story would be Girl from Monday who shows up and reveals things about the aliens to these.
Okay,
others.
So that sort of aligns closely to what I think. I have more elaborate thoughts on that.
I switched the last two. My thing is it's Jack's journey about kind of like realizing his role in this world and It's hard for me to look at it and not want to turn it into what I wish it was, but I guess what it is his journey going from kind of feeling disaffected to maybe realizing he has actually something to, like, stick around and wait for. In this case, that's Cecile / Natalie from Sports Night. For me, at least, I think the way the narrative should function is the girl from Monday's appearance is B-plot, and
I think that
Cecile and what's Will are C-plot.
See, I agree that, like, you would think a movie called The Girl from Monday would, like, heavily feature that in the plot, but I agree with Brendan that it is the least, like,
oh, it has
followed
so
up
so little to do with
So I would
put anything.
It as the C-plot.
Yeah, if she was not the title character, like, she would be such an, like,
yeah.
almost a complete afterthought.
See, that's where I'm struggling. Are we ranking them based on how it is in the movie right now?
How? What, yeah, what do you
oh,
think?
Oh, then it's clearly, yeah,
yeah,
Jack. Because
we're going to do fixes.
Jack, Cecile,
later.
And Will. And then G from M.
G from M.
G from
okay.
M.
So I more specifically think that, yes, the A-plot is about Jack. But what the A-plot is, how it actually plays out and what you as an audience get is, like, a fucking night and day difference.
Yeah.
But what I think plays out as the A-story is, like, is that Jack, the leader of the Partisans, his revolution is failing. And it is revealed that the whole time they knew about it. And now, like, it's the revolution has been sort of warped and is now becoming part of the corporation.
Right.
So it's sort of like the King Lear-esque, like, he's losing control of his whatever small empire he had.
It almost feels like Jack's real journey as a character happened before the movie even happened.
I had that thought,
because
too.
Because
he starts the movie regretful, basically.
Right.
Right. And he ends the movie regretful.
Yeah, but
the one hope spot is he's waiting for Cecile, so which means he actually felt like he had something to hold on to.
Well, I would argue that
he doesn't seem like optimistic. He's just like, nah, I'll hang here and wait.
What he specifically says is a line at the end of the movie is that
I'll resist. Yeah,
but he says that, like, what he finally understands what humans do is that they try.
Well, it's a good thing that Hal Hartley told us that line at the end of the movie, because otherwise it would have seemed like Jack didn't undergo a journey whatsoever.
It's also I don't get that message from the movie at all.
That's, yeah.
That humans try.
Well, I don't think he learned that. I know he learned that because in
Can
the end
say?
In voiceover
right.
he says that.
But I don't see him
learning that at
But
all.
I think what the arc that you actually are given in the movie is, like, Jack, who is sort of this, like, already given up character who doesn't want the world to be this way anymore, is sort of given new resolve by the end of the movie, even though everything has gone terribly wrong.
Yeah, okay.
See, I feel like the big issue I have with that, though, is so we know that Jack can't get back to Monday. It would be one thing if at the end of the movie, the girl from Monday was like, actually, no, I have the technology. You can come back with me, and I'm going there right now. And then he made a choice to stay on Earth and be like, no, I'm human now, and I contributed to this failing, so I have to stay here and fix this.
Right.
So he's like, no, it doesn't work. I'm just going to hang here. What other option do you have, Jack? Like, you don't have another
He actually
choice.
Says he doesn't have another option.
Yeah. So, well, like, it's not like he made a decision.
And that also goes to your point about we feel like we've already we start the movie at the end of his
however,
journey. Because he's already emotionally settled about it.
However,
it
I don't think that that is an uninteresting choice, that he has no decision. But he can choose
how to... But stasis isn't exciting dramatically.
No, what I'm saying is he can choose how to feel about it. Like, that's what cognitive behavioral therapy is.
That I do find interesting.
He might not have a choice that he's stuck here,
but
he
again,
can
the
change
movie,
his attitude about...
The movie
does
not
he
play
though?
That.
I don't
that's
think
what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just telling you, like, what could be there. Like, what I think is...
I think there is potential for it.
Attempted to present to us.
Yes.
But my main problem with any of this ABC nonsense is that everything we learn about Jack, despite the fact that the movie is narrated by him to a large degree...
To an incessant...
Like a reveal. Like, everything about him is a reveal.
Mm-hmm. Except it's not, because there's hints enough that you
well,
can kind of figure it out.
Well, there's hints
because
he's talking as if sort of you might know already,
yeah.
Except that, like, you don't know. So you just sort of find out in the action. Like, you sort of, you're like, okay, he needs an alibi for a night? Why does he need an alibi? And then you're like, oh, he's trying to find out what happened at the news station?
Right.
Oh, he's leader of the resistance.
You would think that the idea behind voiceover is to explain what we're not seeing, but all the voiceover does is make it more confusing. Yeah. I feel like if there was no voiceover whatsoever, I would be probably in the same position.
It's a choice that I really don't understand.
I think I would be happier without so much voiceover.
Yeah, that's also true.
Voiceover is, like, not the greatest way to do anything.
No.
Well, but it's also
not the greatest way to world build.
Yeah.
And as you said, Lee, it's 75% of the movie is VO.
It's so much.
It's so exciting. excessive. It was, I mean, it was more than Bunraku, and Bunraku had too much. So
how do you guys feel about VO in general? I'm just curious. I have friends who are like 100% opposed to voiceover.
I'm not 100% opposed to it. I think it could be...
It's often cheap. I think you do it really well.
I think it can be a really interesting stylistic choice, but I think it has to be done well, and I think it has to be set up.
No, I do agree it's often a crutch and is often not needed. There are many times when voiceover could be cut and it would improve it like this.
No, I think this is one of the biggest times when voiceover is used as like a poor man's world building. Yeah. Like, here's how to explain a lot of information right now. Right. I'm going to tell you, except I'm not going to tell you that well.
But then I think there are movies that use it more sparingly and to greater effect, and not to name check this movie yet again, but Mean Girls uses VO to fantastic effect.
It's what more I, like what a I would, framing device.
I'll tell you what. Yeah. If I was keeping the voiceover, what I would keep is like, I would keep some of the vaguer stuff, but I would reveal other things better. Like, I would keep his refrain about it being such a... He says this thing in the beginning of the movie, and it keeps coming up, and it's clearly sort of like something he... It's sort of how he feels about his journey from where he came from to Earth, is that he says, it's such a long way down and strange. And then there's, like, more to it, like, the body becomes flesh, the flesh becomes something, like, blah, blah, blah. But, like, I would keep that. I would keep stuff like that as voiceover. But I would then explain, have a meeting with Will and Jack. Like, I need you to tell me that he's leader of the Resistance.
Yeah.
I need you to tell me that he's an alien. I don't know why it's held out.
That alien, that alien confirmation, and I hesitate to call it a reveal, but that alien confirmation needs to be delivered a lot sooner than Act 3.
As we said, there is also an issue that Chris and I had.
So I didn't know this was an issue because I watched this movie 2 times at least before. So I guess let's talk about when we realized he's an alien. So I think the first time I realized that he was an alien when he takes her to the hospital and they have that conversation and then he goes home and shows her how to eat. I was like, well, he also was in the car with her and he says like, she's not going to be used to gravity and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, he knows because he's an alien. He's an alien. That's why he knows what's going to happen to her because he's an alien. So
right,
like,
but it's also like a consciousness thing because we're all in agreement that he was an alien.
Yes, but I'm saying
that the
realization
himself.
That he was an alien, for me, part and parcel of that was he knows he's an alien.
Okay.
But for you guys, you kind of figured out that he was an alien around this point, but you thought he didn't know he was an alien.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, because he's so blithe about it, and then he has this, like, furrowed brow and kind of, like, hurt expression when Abercrombie, his boss, I guess, makes a comment of, like, we were there in the beginning, we know you're an alien, but...
Well, that's much later in the movie, but for me, I always read that as, like, he's just stunned that they knew that he was the leader of the party.
I read that completely as him not knowing that he was an alien and then realizing that he was an alien.
That's what it seemed like to me, too. On the first watch, we did try this time around switching, and I was like, okay, I see it from that other perspective.
I mean, I can see, like...
It's very muddy.
Again, there's no one ever says anything in this movie, so, like, no one ever says, like, yeah, I'm that alien, by the way, what's up?
Yeah.
And the only time he says it is after that point in the movie.
Right.
And he says he can't go back. But I thought it was just this unspoken thing the whole time. Now, I get you, like, it's a valid interpretation. However, I think that it's only valid because of how poorly executed the story
is.
Yeah, I'm not saying that I think I'm right and that I think he didn't know he was an alien, but I was saying my point that I could watch this entire movie and think that he doesn't think he's an alien is an indication that something's gone wrong.
Like, I don't even think that was meant to be called into question, which speaks
badly. I think it's entirely possible.
It speaks to how badly everything is done in this movie, like, you're able to have this wild misconception.
It's very poorly plotted.
Yeah. That is my interpretation of this was just that he had come to Earth and he had been sort of like seduced by humanity to the point that like he sort of forgot who he was and basically just became like a human like everyone else to the point that he designed this horrible society.
Did he kick off this horrible new society 10 years
ago? Somehow, yes.
Well, yeah, I get that. But I mean, was that a product of him becoming more human?
No.
Or was that him enacting what he felt as an alien was the best thing for them?
We don't know.
I don't know.
We have no idea why he came to Earth in the first place.
Yeah.
What drove him. And what made him want... Like, his initial motivation is, like, forever shrouded in mystery. And there's so many good explanations you could come up with, but none of them are confirmed.
See, I need that motivation.
No, I think you do need it, for sure.
Yeah.
It's not there at all. You definitely get the sense that, like, whatever drove him to do this... he now realizes it was a terrible mistake. But we have no idea why he came down and was like, I know it would be a good idea.
Yeah, let's architect a new society for everyone.
And for what it is worth, not saying it's good or bad, it's probably bad. I don't think that Hal Hartley was interested in exploring that. I think he just wanted to get to this point where he could talk about sex being used as a commodity. So he probably just didn't think about it because he was like, not important, not part of my story. However, it is part of a decent
narrative
story.
Yeah.
I just feel like that's a huge plot opportunity that you're just letting fly right past you.
It is.
I agree.
We had talked about comparing this to Southland Tales in terms of both being sort of more auteur movies than what the other ones that we usually dealt with. And like the idea that like they're more specifically about a personal story that's being told. And I think like I said, the biggest issue I have like this versus Southland Tales. Southland Tales has like 300 stories going on at once, and this has maybe two. Like that it's two that aren't told very well. Like that's my biggest issue. It's just that like you can have a non-conventional narrative.
See, I would phrase it differently. In my opinion, this has like 10 things happening in it, but nothing is explored. It's like piecemeal bits of those 10 stories. Whereas Southland Tales is just like 300% of 10 stories.
It's like trying to cram a textbook in
They both
minutes.
Have 10 yeah. stories, but one is just like poetic bits of mixed in that don't fragments. And the other one is just like, I'm going to try to shove War and Peace times 10 into 60 minutes.
Yeah. There was at points during Girl from Monday that I just felt like, it just felt more like a tone poem than like a structured
It's referred
narrative.
To Lush on HowHartley.com as a series of visual essays.
Visual essays that are then about nothing?
I mean, I think they approach
me. Visual essays that are that are adverse to both message and narrative.
I think they approach meaning at certain points, but they just kind of like
that's what I think.
It's a toe dipping thing, and it's like, oh no,
go back.
Oh, too hot, too cold.
Back onto the
sand. It's like someone at the beach, like just kind of
the girl from Monday on the beach dipping her toe in the water. Be like, oh no,
she dips more than her toe. It's
salty.
Yeah,
it's just okay. Like salty water.
It's just
water.
Like tears.
Yeah. It's just water.
Just like, num, num,
num, num. There's a scene where
let me lick your tears.
The girl is crying for the first time, and
because they're having sex, is that a coincidence?
I think she's just upset because she sees people having sex. She doesn't know what it means.
Yeah, I don't know if either she doesn't know what it means, or she was like in some way in love with like one of them, and like was felt like jealousy, but couldn't understand why she felt jealousy.
I mean, we can talk about how no director under the sun could pull that out of that actress. Yeah. That was just there was no help.
But anyway, I digress. So she's crying.
Yeah, she's crying, and Sabrina Lone says, it's okay, it's just water. And she takes one of her tears and licks it.
Yeah.
And then she's like, I'll show you what sex is.
And then they all have sex.
Yep.
Which, I know I pointed this out to you guys, but it was crazy how fast it was that it goes from Cecile all up on Jack, and then it is like a quarter of a second that her clothes are back on. She's like, I guess, slid off him and is right next to the girl from Monday being like, why are you crying? Well, it's okay.
Well, it's to the point, like, the music stops abruptly, too. Like, there's score playing. All of a sudden, it just, like, stops. And then it's, like, Natalie being like, hey.
I will tell you, abrupt score stopping is a Hal Hartley special as well. While we're here, and it's probably not going to be as in-depth, but let's talk about the visuals.
Sure.
Okay.
They're bad.
They're bad.
It's inscrutable, this
I mean,
this movie.
At points, it was...
The action is impenetrable.
Yeah.
Did either of you guys ever read House of Leaves?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's like watching House of Leaves.
Yes! Completely!
Yeah.
Where I'm just sort of like, it's a chore. And not a mental chore. It is a physical chore at times to watch this movie. Because not only are you seeing the frame is tilted pretty much all the time at a Dutch angle.
Yep.
Things are blurry. Images are ghosting and tracking.
Goes to black and white sometimes.
Yes.
And then this is all deliberate.
Yeah.
Hal Hartley didn't have to make this film this way. He chose these things. So for
God knows why.
Reason, this level of inability to view is something he wanted out of this movie.
One of the weirder things that I find in this movie is it happens a couple times, but earlier on I noticed it more, is there are scenes where like Jack is in his office and he's talking, and it literally just seems like they splice out like the 2-second pauses he has in between sentences.
Yes.
And so, like, it still reads as, like, one continuous, like, paragraph that he's talking, but yeah. he, like, jumps slightly to the left or moves slightly to the right. And then later, like, when he's in the office with Sabrina Lloyd, and they're, like, having, like, a little flirty thing, like, she just, like, jumps in position, like, closer to him all of a sudden. Like, why? Just well, why?
It also happened again when Will and his cohorts are breaking into the media, whatever.
Yep.
They're, like, in a stairwell, and it's, like, face here, and then it's, like, a quarter inch here suddenly. It's very jerky.
Yeah.
And it's weird because at times it felt like sleep deprivation sometimes where I was like, the world is like slowing down and then like way speeding up. Like, was he going for a dreamlike feeling? Because it didn't quite get there. It just felt
Yeah, I don't know. It's jarring. Like, Logitech is the first that comes to mind because it's another dystopian future sci-fi movie. And like, you gotta wonder if that was part of the inspiration to do this sort of half-assed Logitech vibe to it.
Was he maybe trying to be like, hey, I think that was a really stupid idea. Let me show you the logical conclusion of this stupid idea, which is like this herky-jerky motion and...
I don't know. I think the disorientation is deliberate for some... You know, I think he wanted you to feel bad.
I like...
You have to stop.
I feel bad to the point
that unravel it someday.
I just can't watch it. Like, watching it becomes physically tiring to me.
I agree. It's
House of Leaves.
It's literally the hardest movie we've had to watch.
Yeah. And it's ironically, it might be the shortest. Watch.
It's short and it's hard.
It is. Longest.
It's a sprint. It's like a sprint.
Want to hear something else that's short and hard, honey?
Oh, it's called a chode.
Ew.
Why?
Why'd you have to, like, just cap the innuendo with, like, out-uendo?
That's my thing. Innuendo, I like that.
The blatant reveal innuendo.
It's a terrible film to watch. I have no excuse. There's no excuse. It should be, if it was a decision, it was a bad decision. It should be made better. It could have been made better. Well, even for cheap.
We can at least explain away, I mean, not explain away, but we can at least have a reason for why we have such tight group shots.
Yeah.
That to save money on probably was like, they had to save money on sets.
And I don't really have a problem with the tight shots.
At times I do.
I do. It makes it feel claustrophobic to the point that I'm uncomfortable, and I don't see why I should be feeling that uncomfortable.
And it really... I
don't mind that. I think that could be done well if it was, if there was like a, if you could prove to me there was a good reason to make me
maybe, but here's the thing. Here's what I really didn't like about it. It was so right off the bat something that was getting in the way of anything approaching a naturalistic appearance.
Yeah.
So, like, the way you would have to compose that shot, even in terms of blocking, would be so restricted to a point where I'm just like, I cannot believe what I'm seeing, really.
Do you know, just in general with Hal Hartley, why all the Dutch angles?
No, I wish I did, but it's really... So this movie is I don't think that you... Until you pointed it out, I would have known how many there were, but the one that is famous to me is Faye Grimm because, it's said that the only times that the camera isn't Dutched in Faye Grimm is when they forgot to Dutch it. Yeah. But that is all... That movie is also sort of, like... Hal Hartley taking on the spy thriller genre, which to me, I was like, let's...
I could see, like, a weird angles. Stylized, thing for a spy movie. But, like, here it just seems that, like, I had such a fun time dutching the angle of this other movie, I'll just do it again this whole time.
Yeah, but, like
I just want to know why.
Other movies, no, they're not really that crazily dutched. Okay. Henry Fool didn't have a lot of that going on. Henry Fool was...
No, but I mean, chronologically speaking, maybe he just fell in love with Dutch angles, like, around the time of Faye Grimm and was like,
I mean, they were one after the other.
Yeah.
It was Girl from Monday and then Faye Grimm a year later.
Okay. I have another visual point just to bring up.
Sure.
Every time you see a guard or policeman, I just couldn't with those headpieces. It looks so stupid.
Again, it's like a bicycle helmet with a Viewmaster, and they're holding super soakers that are spray painted.
There was even that one scene where James Urbaniak playing the, like, well, like, lecherous...
Principal.
Principal Funk. He, like, opens the door to their, I don't know, holding cell or whatever, and there's two of them sitting there, and one of them has his visor one way, and as the other one turns to camera, he also flips his visor so it looks the same. And
well, the thing that really bugged me is that they added in that, like, electronic sound effect of post, so he flips it and goes like, or something like that.
It's like, activated.
Yes, you're like, yes, this is electronic, and this is my visor. Thank you, it is the future.
Well, there are also these, like, robotic voices that are the worst.
Yeah, it's like voiced by MacIntock or something. Like,
yeah, it's like going like back to your homes.
Yeah.
News all at 11. Well.
Yeah. I thought.
And that was the one that reads the test scores?
Yeah.
Yes. I loved that.
I found that was jarring to me to try and listen to. Like, it would have been so much easier if she just said, pull up, like, this guy's test scores instead of listening to, like, five of them.
We put the subtitles on one time, and the subtitles were, like, 10 scores behind.
Yeah.
Because the robot was so fucking slow.
Yeah.
The subtitles were like, come on, man. Pick it up.
Well, and you could still have, in that case, like, oh, it's still a little, like, future-y because she's speaking to the computer and it's doing what she asked her to do.
It's not a great, you're not really selling me that it's the future.
Yeah.
It's pretty obviously Super Soaker.
Nothing about this really looks future.
No. It's shot in, like, a sort of grimy New York apartment.
Yeah, and
like, one conference room in an office park that they got. And then a corner of that conference room they made up to look like Jack's desk.
Again, I feel like maybe if Hartley had consulted, like, indie sci-fi directors that were familiar with, like, how to make things look better on the cheap, he might have gotten better results, but he was like, I'm going to follow my own instincts.
It also...
And he just didn't have the instincts for this.
And also, just aside from all the frippery that we're, like, complaining about, well, it was released in 2005, right?
Yeah.
It was shot way too recently to look like that.
Could have looked way better. Anyway, the last thing I want to talk about before fixes, I want to talk about A Hell Hartley because we're doing this auteur film, and I think it's very important to talk about what aspects of this film are things that are just unique to Hell Hartley. I'll preface this by saying that Hell Hartley is arguably my favorite modern director that isn't, like, dead or, like, not make movies anymore. I sort of fell in love with, like, his earlier movies. And they're not very frequent. Like, you're working with about 10 full feature movies. And the bulk of them were before 2005. And yes, I think what we can fairly say are the distinct Hartley features. Everything's done by him. He writes them all. He directs them all. He scores them all. He does most of everything himself. He does work with, like, cinematographers and stuff, but he's very, like, adamantly involved in, like, setting up the shots. His sort of directing style has been compared to, like, a choreographer sometimes, to the extent that he's, like, adamant about blocking and, like, say this line, then pause, turn 90 degrees, say the rest of the line. Like, that's sort of the level of detail you get when you work with Hartley. And you can read a lot, you can watch a lot of this in the making of Girl from Monday. They'll tell you, like, the actors will tell you. And he works with the same pool of actors a lot. James Urbaniak, Martin Donovan, Thomas J. Ryan, Parker Posey, Edie Falco in a lot of the earlier ones. Bill Sage has been in a bunch of them as well. He's in this one. Adrian Shelley as well is probably pretty big. And I think the other big thing with his directing style is the dialogue that he writes and the way that he wants it delivered not how people speak at all. It is, like, a unique style that exists to this movie. It's poetic. It's, like, almost, like, free verse style dialogue.
I mean, I feel it at times where, like, a very sleepy poetry jam.
Yeah. I see what's interesting, too, is about those movies, which are all Henry Fool, Unbelievable Truth, Trust. They all sort of take place in, like, a blue-collar... just shit suburb. I don't quite relate, but, like, you're at least familiar with the territory. And that is 100% how Hartley's upbringing. Like, he talks about it a lot, that he grew up in a blue-collar suburb, and there's, like, this warring thing of, like, what he was raised with and the sort of, like, artistic, poetic sensibilities that he is inclined to from, like, his chosen career. And I think Henry Fool is probably the most direct reference to that sort of mismatch.
Sure.
But I think movies like Trust and Unbelievable Truth, which still take place in these worlds, and feature characters that are, like, up to their knees in the problems of these worlds, are where his talents shine the most, because it's something he really understands.
So maybe that's the core of the problem here, because there wasn't even any much for him to really connect to in this story.
That might be it. But yeah, to long story short, maybe I think that's... it's worth just kind of getting into what the Hell Hartley aspects of this movie were. Versus, like, so some of the stuff that's bad about this movie is just bad stuff.
Yeah.
And some of it is just Hell Hartley. That dialogue is just how he writes.
I didn't really have a lot of problem with, necessarily.
I mean, I do love that line, let's fucking increase our buying power.
Yeah, that is a great line.
What a line.
I actually do unironically like the line, it's such a long way down, it's strange.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, look, the dialogue I'm not complaining about so much. It's like just everything else is bad.
No, I know.
Bad, bad, bad.
I know.
Bad.
Anyway.
Let's talk about fixes.
Who wants to go first?
I can go first because you seem to all say that I never do.
Do we accuse you of never going first?
Can I actually support what he just said? Because I was literally about to be like, oh, that's a first. Mm-hmm. So
I don't keep track, man, but you can go first.
Oh, wait, I have a real quick question before I do. So it was just something I jotted down whenever you were reading the synopsis.
Yep.
The gun that Will takes from Jack's car, does it ever come back?
No, it's a Chekhov's gun.
I was going to say, because Chekhov is fucking spinning in his grave right
that
now.
That never gets used.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I
completely forgot about that.
That was on my mind a lot of times, and I'm glad you mentioned it, because I would have forgotten about it and all the stuff we talked about. But
it's ridiculous, right? That,
like, nothing ever comes of that gun.
Yeah.
Wow.
Anyhow. All right, so I'll delete the caps lock sentence at the top of this, does the gun ever come back? All right, so as I often do, I just wrote, like, sort of a quick synopsis. I think the story should follow, I wrote High School Baby, which I assume meant Will.
Yes.
you see this all through his point of view. He decides to join Jack when his adopted mother is sent to the moon, because that's a thing that happens in this world, lest we forget.
Uh-huh.
He still meets up with Natalie, a Triple M employee, and when he's trying to, like, lie low, and she gets caught for being in an orgy, sent to high school. That happens the same. Will realizes something is up with the school whenever the new mandatory soda machines are put in. He tries to find Jax, finds him passed out in a car just as the girl from Monday exits the ocean, so they're all three there for that part. Natalie helps them uncover information about the Triple M putting the soda machines in, but Principal Urbaniak gets suspicious and sends her to the moon. Or, you know, he's about to send her to the moon. Jack reveals to Will that he is the initial alien from Monday. Will is the initial alien from Monday. He was adopted as a child. Aliens have come down to try and return him to their collective mind. Jack was the first one sent down initially to try and obtain baby Will, but he was seduced by humanity and decided that he was going to try to improve their entire society and architect this world. He realized that he was helping people give in to their ids and wasn't actually doing anything useful. So after coming to this conclusion, he decided to secretly try and destroy the society, and by happy coincidence in doing that, found Will. The girl from Monday reveals that there have been many aliens sent to retrieve Will and after Jack have failed, but they were also unsuccessful. You can't get back to Monday after you start to discover your own humanity. Abercrombie reveals to Jack that they knew about the existence of aliens this whole time, he knew that Jack was an alien, and that they've also been manipulating Jack to create an opposition to strengthen the company's own aim. So everything he has done was because he was subtly coerced to do it by Triple M. Meanwhile, Natalie has uploaded information about Triple M's relation to Cecile has uploaded information about Triple M's relation to the terrorists and the soda that will cause a violent reaction in students and the aliens that create society, and the world begins to tear itself apart. Jack manages to sneak out as Abercrombie is distracted by Natalie creating havoc and finds the girl from Monday and Will, and the three of them get to the water. Natalie is killed in the riots that ensue as the trio dives into the water, and the movie ends as a group of angry, violent high schoolers start to conquer the city.
Oh, cool. Wow. Cool.
That's the end.
Ugh. I like that.
Thank you.
Mine, as always, is not nearly as specifically detailed, but while I was watching this, I had a thought about another movie I'd watched while I was recovering from hernia surgery. I watched the movie The Lobster, which is also kind of a semi-dystopia, surrealist kind of dream-like movie, but it's very successful, and I think in a lot of the ways that this movie tries to be and fails. Because it also establishes kind of an absurd premise, and it manages to just have you be okay with it and accept it. So my thought would be less time spent on how sex is affecting your credit score, more time spent on why Jack was there to begin with as an alien, why he introduced, like, what was the motivation for introducing this idea and falling in with these, like, ad people amongst the humans. I had a similar idea to Brendan in terms of the reason why the girl from Monday is there, because she's the latest of a bunch of aliens sent to reclaim him. My thought is that Will, in my scenario, would be kind of more like a surrogate son, which would probably be the one, like, final nail in his human coffin kind of thing of, like, well, in caring for Will as, like, a father figure, that's what made him more human and he can't return to Monday. Honestly, it's just, like, cut out a lot of the weird narrative bullshit. I don't know, and stop it with the weird, like, halfway la jetée stuff. I can't undutch most of the angles, please. Clean it up, Hartley.
Shit together.
But to bring it back to the lobster thing, I would just... Because you can do, like, a subdued, very simple visual palette like that movie does. Just commit to that.
I like it when your fix is a variant of, why don't you just try to be less bad?
It's good.
Why don't you just take out the shitty things.
Yeah. I have a suggestion for you. Be good.
Anyway, I want to take what was given to me with the bones of this movie, and I want to just make it work and make it make sense. So I think what I would do is have my A plot be, again, this. We start with this Jack, the alien leader of the revolution, who has long known that, like, what he did was a mistake. I would also absolutely give him a reason why he did this in the first place.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I came up with is that perhaps because the place he came from was, like, a sort of utopia, but it was then, like, boring, where, like, love and all that had no meaning anymore because it was all present, and therefore there was nothing to contradict it, so therefore it didn't have any meaning on its own anymore. So he came down here and was like, well, I want to, like, the place I came from was, like, boring stasis where nothing good happens because everything's good, therefore good has no meaning. So he decides to, like, try to make a world that has meaning again and fucks it up. And I haven't let that part out. That was the shower thought this morning. That's not really that thought out, but, like, that's one of the reasons he could have. But we start with him in the present, and our A story that we're introduced to within the first 10 minutes, please, is the Soda Pop in the Schools campaign.
Yes.
And it's the sort of, like, that's going to be the arc through which we learn about how this world works, but we're going to focus on it, and we're going to learn about the world through this plot like a normal movie does. So he's investigating the soda. What's going to happen? Like, what are they trying to do? We'll keep the trying to sabotage the newsfeed as like a sort of, again, a hint that like things are getting bad because they try to sabotage the newsfeed, but it's already sabotaged with even without them trying to do it. I sort of had this idea, that I think Brendan took and ran with, that like, because the boy that Will, the character, is like also probably an alien. And I thought like, this Brazilian model doesn't really do anything for me in the movie.
Shocking.
So I wanted there to be two aliens, and that one of them is Jack and the other is a foil for Jack, and it would be this boy from Monday, Will.
Your boy from Monday.
who is also, like, his head lieutenant, because he's been here long enough that, like, he thinks it's, like, the only thing that's gonna get Jack back to the planet is if they, like, fucking wrap up this revolution right quick. But he is, like, the opposite of Jack, where Will deliberately does not form relationships or attachments to anyone except Jack, because he knows that it's going to, like, prevent him from going back to his planet. So he is the leader of the resistance, or, like, the head lieutenant, but he's very detached and cold, and is the sort of, like, outsider, and is constantly going to Jack, like, why do you care, like, blah, 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 like, what's the point of all this? Whereas Jack is the more, like, human of them, and is the one that is, like, sort of stuck here trying to fix the mess that he made. And I would keep Cecile, and I would actually probably keep the Cecile Will arc, where Will is sort of trying to use Cecile because of her position in the company. So he's sort of manipulating her. Like, he is cold, but he would have the ability to, like, manipulate emotionally people, to win them over. I would just follow the Soda Pop arc, to its completion. And in that, Jack has a too strong of a connection to humanity and probably Cecile in general, that he can't just leave her behind. And decide that he's going to try to stay and resist. And that he ultimately finds this, even though it's like, it's a lot of suffering, to be more fulfilling in existence than what he had back on Monday.
That makes sense. I also like this idea of a smaller mystery tackling the larger mystery of this world for the viewer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like through the solving and the following of that mystery,
instead of having Jack voice over all the details of the revolution, you would just start in this world and get introduced to it while you're learning about the Soda Pop mystery. Would you recommend this movie? No. I don't recommend this movie. No. I want people to like Hal Hartley. What I'm going to do is recommend that you watch a good Hal Hartley movie, because I think it's interesting, his style as a director and what he does. I would recommend Trust or The Unbelievable Truth. Go for him.
But this movie, no. Absolutely
this movie,
not.
No. Don't watch it. I don't want you to watch it because I don't want you to watch it and be like, oh, this guy just sucks.
Right.
Watch a good Hal Hartley movie. Don't watch this one. I mean, it's short, but don't watch it anyway. There's nothing to recommend this movie.
No, not at all.
It's really not.
It's not even visually pleasing.
No.
It is, in fact, visually painful. Website?
Yes.
Facebook?
Yes.
Twitter?
Yes.
No.
www.tradpack.com, facebook.com/ywatchpodcast, and Twitter is @ywatchpodcast, but I really haven't used that in a long time.
I don't use Twitter.
Yeah.
Maybe if I did, I'd use that one.
It's going the way of Tumblr for us, guys.
Yeah.
Oh, the days when we had a Tumblr. Oh, should we buy it out?
Yeah, let's buy it out.
I was going to say, let's buy and increase our buying power.
Increase our buying power at a Dutch angle.
Or
bye!
Yeah, bye!